Well, Jefferson, right after this passage, does something else that's very radical. I want to read the next lines to you. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Jefferson is doing something very radical here. He's turning from a justification of American actions to a call for revolutionary reconstruction. He is stating that we no longer have to be bound by the governments we've inherited, that we're in a position to build a new, brighter, and better Republican future, a challenge that we'll see in the next lecture Jefferson himself took up quite seriously. Well, the next part of the Declaration addresses the grievances of the American people, and it's pretty standard. It's almost exactly what we found in, or would find in, the Summary View of the Rights of British America. But even there, he's trying to be inclusive. For example, he complains that the king has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent shall be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. Well, that's a universal complaint. Every colony's legislature is hampered by the suspending clause, which means that any law passed by a colonial legislature can't go in effect until it's been approved by the British government. A serious problem when one faces an immediate crisis. But he reaches out from beyond his Virginia constituency to address grievances that speak to the issues of other regions. He speaks to the issues of the middle colonies, for example, in complaining about the way the king has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our constitutions and unacknowledged by our laws. The first item he mentions is that for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, which is a clear reference to the quartering controversy that had racked New York in the years before independence. He goes on to complain about the cutting off of our trade with all parts of the world and the eliminating of our constitutional governments. It's a clear message to Massachusetts. We feel your pain. We understand the crisis you face, because the acts he's there referring to are the coercive acts forced on Massachusetts. He even reaches out to Quebec with the following complaint: for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, the so-called Quebec Act, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these states. So Jefferson is reaching out to the French, to every part of American society, pointing out that all of them share grievances against this oppression, that they all are part of one larger struggle. Well, part of what's revealing about the document are, in fact, the bits that didn't make it, that got edited out. I want to read an extended passage of the longest bit that actually got pulled. And it's this complaint against the king. He has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. And Jefferson is again returning to that problem of slavery and trying to make some sense out of it, blaming it on the British experience. He goes on to state, he is now exciting those very people to rise in arms among us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people upon whom he also obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with crimes which he urges them to commit against the lives of another. This is a reference to Dunmore's proclamation, which offered freedom to all slaves who would join the British cause. Understandably, the Americans who edited the document left it out, because in fact it was not really appropriate to blame the problem of slavery on the British. What I want to conclude with, then, is two things. First, the final sentence, which expresses the wonderful tone of Jefferson's whole document. For the support of this declaration, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. It's that tone, married as it is to the rich principles of revolutionary reconstruction and the rights of man, which we will now trace in the next lecture as Jefferson applies those principles in reconstructing revolutionary Virginia.